This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Wednesday is the 25th anniversary of the first moonwalk. General Chuck Yeager was never an astronaut, but he helped make space travel possible. He was the first person to travel faster than the speed of sound. Yeager was a fighter pilot in World War II. After surviving many dogfights, he took another risky job, testing high-performance aircraft. He rapidly earned the reputation of America's top test pilot. He broke the sound barrier October 14, 1947, in an X-1 aircraft, which he rode 40,000 feet high, traveling over 660 miles per hour. In 1953, he established a world speed record of 1,650 miles per hour in an X-1A plane. Tom Wolfe called Yeager the most righteous of all the possessors of the right stuff. In 1988, I asked Yeager if he was seated in a comfortable position when he broke the sound barrier.
Well, no, it was very uncomfortable, and the reason was we had no source of power in the X-1. We used compressed nitrogen gas to do all the work, like raise and lower the gear and pressurize the liquid oxygen tanks, which, incidentally, they had no seat in the X-1. You sat with your back against the bulkhead, which contained the liquid oxygen, and the temperature of the liquid oxygen was 290 degrees below zero, and it was one of the coldest cockpits I've ever been in my life. And you sat on the floor, and your knees were higher than your rear end, so you could pull high G's without blacking out. And you couldn't see too well out of it, but you got to remember, it was a research airplane, and it was built in 1944. So.
It really does sound very uncomfortable from the way you're
well,
describing it.
Well, it was, but you sat in the thing almost an hour, but it kept you awake, that's for sure.
Right. Well, when you were flying it, what indications would you have? What kind of meters would tell you when you had actually broken the sound barrier?
Well, I had an altimeter that told me how high I was. I had an indicated airspeed and that told me how fast I was going through the air in miles per hour. But the one thing that we relied on was a Mach meter that told us what our percentage was in relationship to the speed of sound. For instance, Mach 1 is the speed of sound at the altitude you're flying. And if you're going 0.9 Mach, that's 90% of the speed of sound. Because, see, an airplane responds to the effects of the speed of sound, like or shock waves on the airplane, so you're only interested in your percentage of the speed of sound or the Mach number that you're going. I had a Mach meter that went up to 1.0, and the day that I actually broke Mach 1, I sat there and watched that Mach meter build up, you know, since we'd been up to about 0.94 or 0.95 Mach number on the previous flight, and I watched it build up, and when it got up to about 0.96, and then that buffeting was quite heavy on the airplane, it was shaking pretty bad. But then at that point, the Mach meter went off the scale, and if I extrapolated, you know, it'd be about 1.06, but the Mach meter only went to 1.0. But when it did, all the buffeting smoothed out, which was an indication that we had, you know, supersonic flow over the whole airplane, meaning that it was flying at supersonic speeds. And when this happened, we made the first sonic boom there at Edwards, and that's about the way it happened.
When you realized that you'd broken the speed of sound, that your mission was accomplished, did you stay up in the air a while and just have a good time and celebrate?
I didn't have. No, you can't stay up because, see, a rocket, you burn out all of your fuel. It only had to last 2.5 minutes, and then you're gliding down to make a dead stick landing on Rogers Dry Lake out there at Edwards or then Muroc Air Base. But I was elated. I did a couple of rolls, and when I got down, since I was pretty well beat up from a horseback riding accident a couple of days before, I was kind of bushed. And also, you're sitting in that cold airplane, you really get cold soaked, and it's good to get out into the warm sun. And also their program was classified, so it's not exactly as the film The Right Stuff depicts it, but we knew it was classified, and just a couple, three of us had a little party that night. I mean, big party, if you want to call it that.
Well, because it was classified, you even had to speak in code in your radio communications while you were in flight.
Ridley and I knew what we were doing, and, you know, you really don't say a heck of a lot anyway when you're flying.
What were the reasons for classifying it? Why was it so top secret?
Because of what we found out, and the reason was, if you recall, once we got into the region of the speed of sound, we lost our elevator effectiveness. Now, Terry, this may get a little technical, but All airplanes, light airplanes, if you look at them, they have a horizontal stabilizer or a tail, and on the trailing edge of that horizontal stabilizer, and the elevators or flippers. And when you move the control stick back, that elevator goes up, and that's what controls the attitude of your airplane. It makes the nose go up or go down. And when we got into up to about 0.93 Mach number, or 93% of the speed of sound, we lost the effectiveness of that elevator on the X-1, and we couldn't control our airplane. But we had built a capability into the X-1 of moving the whole horizontal stabilizer or tailplane, and we found out that, lo and behold, we could control the X-1 through Mach 1 with that horizontal stabilizer. Now, it was interesting to me, when that happened, we found that out. Then, of course, we started building flying tails on our airplanes, our combat airplanes that were built 3 or 4 years later. And it was amusing to me to find out that the British and the French and the Soviet Union didn't find out that little trick for 5 years. That was the reason it was classified, and mm-hmm. rightly so.
How else did breaking the sound barrier change aviation?
Well, it opened up space to us. Up until that time, you recall, we would never had had an airplane out beyond the speed of sound, and we didn't know what problems we would run into, and that flying tail that I mentioned is one of the secrets we found out that solved a lot of problems. We also developed higher thrust engines that could drive fighter aircraft or operational aircraft through the speed of sound. Once we got beyond the speed of sound, then there's no other barriers other than heat, and that opened up space for us.
Chuck Yeager, recorded in 1988. This is Fresh Air.